I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 415. I warned you I'd be talking about Destiny. This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I am Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hey, hey, ho, ho.
How you doing?
I am good.
That's good. That's nice. Good's a good place
good
to be.
Good is a great place to be when you haven't been good for a while.
Yeah, no. Good is a good place to be, like you said, when you haven't been good in a while, or if you've been not good. Get to good is really good.
To go from not good to good is like 15 steps.
Yeah.
To go from like fine to good is like 2.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that you're good.
Thank you. Are you good?
I'm good. You know?
Excellent.
I got games. I got internet. Finally.
Right.
Because I was having some issues there with my Fios.
And now it's all fixed?
It's all fixed.
Nice.
In time for holiday game-a-thons and whatnot.
Mm-hmm, yes.
It's all good.
And with Christmas not too far away either on top of that.
Exactly. You know, I'm looking forward to the holidays where I will be able to sit upon my rump.
Ho, 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 bitch!
And drink beverages of the adult kind.
Eggnog!
And play video games until
Destiny!
Yeah, let me not lie. Well, no, I've told myself that
you're lying to yourself.
Slightly be lying to myself.
You're fibbing, fibbing.
But I'm trying to finish Unity before
New Year's. Not gonna happen.
No, I've made a good progress.
Not gonna happen.
No. Hold on. Not Panda complete it where I get all the things.
Oh, okay. You're not gonna magpie it.
Yeah, no. Storyline complete.
Okay.
Because I can go back and run all that extra stuff after. Storyline complete, I'm shooting for before New Year's. So, with holiday time off and everything, I'll have that in hand. And then I'm looking to start a new game to take its spot whilst I continue to play Destiny, because I'm not going to stop playing Destiny ever. So I'm looking for a good one to slide in there.
And slide in there.
On Tundra. And I thought it might be Sunset, but after listening to you talk about it, I don't think it's going to be Sunday. So here's the thing, though. And you're going to be like, nuh-uh. And I'm going to be like, yeah, I'm thinking about it. And you're going to be like, no, you're not.
Okay. I'm listening.
I'm thinking that it might be Inquisition.
Uh-uh.
See? I told you.
No.
I'm thinking that it might be. Look, everything that I read and everybody that I talk to is absolutely fucking enjoying it. And as much as I'd like it to be Mordor, I don't have the time commitment.
No, Mordor is commitment.
To do Mordor.
But here's my thing.
And Destiny.
Like we talked about on the show last week, where, like, I know to me, I don't feel that Dragon Age Inquisition should have gotten Game of the Year. Like, I don't believe that in my heart of hearts. And I'm a Dragon Age girl. You guys know.
You. Well, we know.
And, like, I'm playing Dragon Age Inquisition right now, and, like, I'm actually, I don't know if I'm enjoying it the way that I normally do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have been having such a hard time deciding who my character's gonna romance, and I can't tell.
That's a personal decision.
No, because usually there was always one person that always kind of stuck out in my group. For one, they're giving you 9 different companions to choose from.
That's a lot of booty.
That's a lot of people to have to sit there and get to know and decide whether or not you're gonna let them stick it in you or you stick it in them, depending on your gender.
Exactly.
And the And as I play through and I talk to all these people, while they're fully fleshed characters, which I love. I love having a party that's very diverse. And they communicate between themselves when you're out adventuring. So it's not like they only talk to you. They talk to they all talk to each other. And I love that interaction. But I have yet to flirt with a single person. Like, I can't find anyone romanceable enough. And that is a first for me. Like, usually I jump on the first one who's like, hey, baby, nice spells, because I'm usually a mage. So, or I'm an elf, and hey, nice ears. You know, it's pretty simple to woo me in Dragon Age. I'm not that hard to please. But I'm struggling, and I can't tell if it's because I'm not finding any of them romantically attractive, or because I'm reading into the fact that these are all really unique characters, and, like, I'm saving myself for, like, when I know I've met the right character.
Are you saving yourself for the one? It is.
It's really kind of weird because, you know, at the pace that I'm going in this game, I'm going to get to the end without having any romance at all, which is kind of a big vein in the Dragon Age universe.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, you got to get some of that booty. So you got to fix that. You got to
work on it. It's so hard. I can't, like, I could go for Solace because I'm an elf mage. He's an elf mage. He does stuff.
We can make elf mage babies.
Right, exactly. Or, you know, right now, I think the first one that I've thought about.
I thought you were going to go and bang the bull.
I thought so, but he's a little too gruff for me, I think, which is, like, my character is very
Is your character
righteous.
Dainty and sweet?
No, she's righteous. Okay. So, like, she doesn't do things illegal. Like, you know, there have been offers and temptations to do things that are not necessarily above board. Well, I don't necessarily follow, like, any creed. I follow my own rule of what I think is right and what is not right.
Uh-huh.
And, like, she always says something very in, you know, I do what I feel is right type of stuff. And everyone else is just like, well, that's bullshit. And, like, but, like, I can't, it's been so hard. Like, they're all really cool people. Like, I just got my last guy who's also a mage, but he's from Tevinter, which if you play the game, they'll give you a rundown and all that stuff. And, like, he is very attractive looking and is very, very witty. And he has an accent, which usually accents just legs open. Like, that's just kind of how
that
happens.
I'm sorry,
what? Legs open. You know, when there's a good accent, like, if it's good and it rings in my ears, I'm like, hey.
So, you heard it here first. Ring Panda's ears, legs go.
Bing! Yeah.
Open sesame.
Oh, yeah. But, like, I still haven't even flirted with him. And I got him in my party, and I'm just like, Like, there's so much going on in Dragon Age that, like, I'm not thinking about me first. I'm thinking about the people of Ferelden and Orlais.
Wow!
I'm thinking about the benefit, their lives, more than whether or not you're going to see me in my skivvies.
So does that mean that you've become a mature gamer now?
It is really sad and disappointing that I can't just be like, hey, you're hot. Love option. Like, where's Fenris when you fucking need him? Because if Fenris showed up, it'd be all set. Done. Ding, ding, ding.
So is that the problem? Are you saving yourself for Fenris?
Because no, what you because really in my last game, I banged Fenris all time, every day, all day. I got it out of me because in Dragon Age 2, you were able to, even if you had a rivalry, look at me practicing that
there
word.
There you go.
With somebody, you could still, like, anger bang them.
Yes, you mentioned that.
Yeah, and I did that. And I did the good one, and the bad one, and the middle one. And I did all of it. And I was content with that. But no one gives me the rush and surgence of fire the way that Fenris did in Dragon Age 2. So, like, I'm just like, meh. And this is a totally different character who has nothing to do with that subset of characters. Which is really kind of disappointing, because I was so hoping that we would encounter people from Dragon Age 2, except for the people that I killed, because obviously they're dead, so they shouldn't be walking around.
Yes. They should
stuff.
Not.
And, no. But, like, it pains me. I feel, from my experience in the game, that I don't know how you're gonna like the combat system. Like, the game is gorgeous, hands down. The game has a lot going on, hands down. But it depends on how you're going to set it up. Like, if you set it up in the way of Origins, you might like that more. Because they changed it and kind of watered down the mechanics in 2, which people were like, this is way too easy. I can just hold one button the whole time. It could essentially play itself, you know, and not too many people like that aspect. Sometimes I just want to get to the next plot point, so I don't have a problem with that personally.
Mm-hmm.
But because you're not really a RPG-ish kind of, you know, turn-based-y type, you might not appreciate that. But the story is worth venturing into, so...
Well, like I said, I was thinking of what I could slide in to be my game to hold me over while I'm playing Destiny, because Destiny gets most of my time.
All of your time?
No, it doesn't get all of my time, okay? Because I'm halfway through Unity, the storyline on Unity.
I'm very surprised.
I completed Bayonetta 2 twice, so it doesn't get all of my time. It just gets most of my time.
Like 87% of your time.
It gets like 89%
okay,
of my time.
Okay, at least you're being honest.
Yes, it does. But I definitely want to have other things to talk about than my Destiny addiction. And so what I'm thinking is if I don't pick up another game like Inquisition, and Mordor is a really attractive game. The whole your story is your story.
Well, it's Assassin's Creed in Middle-earth.
Correct. But
so it's right up your alley.
I don't have the time commitment for it. And I'm not playing anything scary. Like, I had a couple people hit me up on social and be like, you should play Five Nights at Freddy's. And I was like, no.
Oh my god, you should totally play that and then play Five Nights at Freddy's 2.
Yep, nope.
It's scary as fuck.
Yep.
I, now when I drive by Chuck E. Cheese, I'm like, nope.
Yep. So I didn't like animatronics when I was a kid going to Chuck E. Cheese, and it was lit well.
Yeah. I always wondered how they got those things to work.
It's just all programmed. Computer programmed.
I know, but that was back before Panda realized that, you know, things could be plugged in and could just do things. I didn't understand appliances. I thought there were magical elves that made things work for the longest time.
Yeah. So I took a look at a couple of trailers for Five Nights at Freddy's, and I was like, no.
It's actually really good.
I'm sure it's really good, but I was like, no. You know me. I hate jump scares.
Oh, and that's all the game is.
Exactly. And I hate jump
scares. For 7 nights, not even 5, because there's a mysterious 6th night and even more mysterious 7th night.
Yeah. Nope.
Where and everything is just coming at you.
Yep.
And you actually get less money on the 7th night, and you get fired at the end of the game. Spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't played. You are a security guard at a Chuck E. Cheese-esque place for pretty much just a week because the guy before you had an accident.
Yeah.
And you are sitting in your security booth, and you have cameras on a laptop that you have to open up to survey at. And every night, the old guard calls you and tells you things that you need to be mindful of, like certain animatronics will, at night, when no one is watching them, will get up and roam around. It's kind of like an unspoken deal that they have with the owners of the establishment, that as long as during the day, they have to do what they were built to do, but at night, they can roam around and do whatever. But because these are AI, or animatronics, that don't really have much of a sentient thought, if they see a human being after hours, they just think that you are one of them without your animatronic suit on, and they will forcefully shove you into an animatronic suit, which will, kill you as a human, because you're not meant to be in a giant machine, you know, even though mechas are things that we have seen done. But that's beside the point.
Tangent.
But I have played through night 3 of Five Nights at Freddy's, because I just don't have the reflexes that are needed to get through, because you've got 4 basic animatronics that all have different patterns of when they're going to move or how they move, and they keep introducing one each of the new nights up until the 5th night, where they start talking about Freddy, which is the bear. And at the end of it, you find out that this is not the first establishment of Freddy's, and the first one, somebody who had worked at that establishment stole one of the Freddy suits and then was abducting children and murdering them. So, like, they went underground for a while, and this is their resurgence, and they kept the animatronics from the thick, you know, from before, and it's, interesting, to say the least. And I've kind of given that away. So the sequel is actually the prequel, which is in the first establishment, and the guy that you are, you're in also a security booth, except in the first game, you had doors that you could shut, and you only had so much power to get you from midnight to 6 a.m. So if you made it to 6 a.m., you made it to the next day, but if you didn't, obviously something happened. And in the second game, you're literally at the end of a hallway in an office that doesn't have a door, and they give you a Freddy mask for you to put over your face, and that's all you've got really to protect yourself. And you have to wind up this music box because there's an animatronic baby that you want to keep it asleep. You don't want it to wake up because that's kind of like an insta-kill. There's one that looks like a little boy with balloons, and he'll crawl through the vents because there are vents on each side of you that they can crawl out from. And some of the animatronics are deformed and have like multiple rows of teeth and look really scary, especially in the dark. If you have no intentions of ever playing...
like me.
...these games, I would highly recommend, if you're into Let's Plays, watching a guy named Markiplier play them. Because, one, he makes it more entertaining and less scary to see him playing it. And you obviously get to see the entire game. And you can get some reward out of seeing all of it, even though you did not achieve it yourself. Which I have done on occasion, particularly with Markiplier, because he has a creamy, buttery voice. It's very nice. Very nice.
Is it like a nice Alfredo?
It is like a... it is like the cheese sauce that I make for my mac and cheese.
Ooh, that's nice.
It's like the Shamar Moore of cheese sauces.
Ooh.
It has like 4 6-packs of abs.
That's a lot of six-packs.
That's a lot of 6-packs for cheese sauce.
Yeah.
I mean, it is creamy, buttery.
Skip a day in the gym.
He is humorous. He's informed. He's not bad on the eyes. Absolutely not. You can grab some popcorn and just light some candles, play some Yanni in the background.
My thing was, how I got introduced to it was I was asking out on social like games that I should try, and somebody brought it up and they recommended. They're like, "Oh, check it out. Get the trailer. It's on YouTube or whatever." And so I did a search for it, and what was funny was that when I searched for it, the trailer for the game came up, but also Teens React to Five Nights at Freddy's popped up. So I watched the trailer, and I was like, yeah, no, that's not going to be good.
Oh, it's good.
And
it's
ends
so good.
On, like, the bear, and I was like, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Well, the thing about that bear is that there's the regular Freddy, and then there's the golden Freddy. And there's no way to predict when the Golden Freddy is going to show up. And usually that's like an instant death if he shows up. And there have been some people who have actually survived a night that they had one. And once you make it through the 6 nights, when the 7th night pops up, you have the ability to beef up their interactions, the animatronics. And somebody actually set it up so that they were all on their highest rates of movement. And literally, he cleared the whole night. And, like, literally, he was just flicking on this, lifting this up, putting this down, and, like, and you have to conserve your power, like, because you can't sit there and just shut your doors all night because it burns your power. So you have to trust that you are fast enough to turn on a light and see a shadow and shut your door before you, obviously, get murdered. The ability to be able to do that is astounding to me because I don't react fast enough for that type of stuff, which is why I never understood DDR.
I understand DDR, I just can't do it.
I can't do it. But, like, they're just... and it's all react, you know, it's amazing. It's like watching Riverdance. It's actually essentially Riverdance DDR, and I feel like, depending on how you have your keyboard set up for Five Nights at Freddy's, it's kind of the similar, you get just drawn in. Like, from that anime, the world only God knows.
Mm-hmm.
When he would go into his God mode.
Yes.
Like, that's what kind of...
like, 17 machines at the same time.
And, like, it seems like he's going slower than he actually... and he's actually going really, really fast, and she's just drawn into how
it's
he's doing...
because he's got that glow.
And that's what I feel like if you watch, like, that particular setup, anyone who's doing it, that's what you see. Just the overly fanning of the clicking, and, like, it's overly slow, but you know it's obviously not slow. And you're just drawn in by, like, this is amazing. It's like one of those.
Yeah. Feelings. So, Five Nights at Freddy's was ruled out.
You should play Slender.
Nope.
Really?
Nope.
You should play Horrible Nightmares.
Alright, I'm gonna say
you should play Sleep Among Us.
Ready? Listen to
Among the Sleep, I mean, Among the Sleep.
I don't like jump scares. I don't mind thrillers. I'm actually very attracted to thrillers, but I like them when they're psychological and not jump scares.
You should play The Vanishing of Ethan Carter.
I've gone back and forth about whether or not to play The Vanishing of Ethan Carter, because that seems like it would be...
That is more suspense than it is horror.
Yeah.
Because it depends on how you infer the things that you encounter. It's really your perception, not... Because the game doesn't give you a lot. They want you to build up on that on your own.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the whole basis of psychological thrillers anyway.
Exactly. And so I like the psych thriller more than the gory, blood-cut jump scare. I think that there's value in a good jump scare, for sure. But I don't enjoy experiences that are all built around jump scare.
Right.
And Five Nights at Freddy's is built all around
that's
jump
that's
scare.
That's its selling mechanic, is the jump scare.
And don't... Nope.
Which is funny, because in horror movies, like, the jump scare is, like, the most cliched thing.
But it's the go-to.
It's the thing. It's like, oh, you want a cheap scare? Boom. Have somebody pop out of
you
nowhere.
You can call it a cheap scare, but it's
effective. Cheap, you know? And effective.
So, you can't really fight it.
Box wine. Cheap and effective.
Okay.
Gets the job done.
Hey, there are better wines that are coming in boxes these days.
Now.
Yeah.
Now.
But, so, I threw that off the list, and I kind of came back around. I was like, well, if I can't really settle on anything too dramatic or really interesting, maybe I'll just bide my time for The Order, because I do want to play The Order.
Oh, I purposely got a PS4 for the sole purpose of getting The Order.
The Order 1886, it looks so...
I want to be on a team with Nikola fucking Tesla.
I mean, who wouldn't want to get down with Tesla?
I mean, I want to get down with his alternating current.
I see what you did.
Yeah. Science.
Yes.
Words.
Well. Phrases. Punctuation.
Mutual broken. Appreciation of electricity. Because without it right now, we would be in the dark. There'd be no lights, no sound, nothing.
No, sound exists without electronics.
But
no one would be listening to this podcast.
No one would be listening to this show because it's done electronically.
Yes, because we are, in fact, the Electric Sisterhood.
Yes. Oh my god, even our name would just be Sisterhood because there'd be no electricity. That is really sad.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, well then let's move along. So, I think I may end up, like, just focused on Destiny until The Order comes out after I finish Unity. I tried to tell myself that I would go back and that I would finish Watch Dogs. I don't see that happening.
Me neither.
Sorry,
Ubi.
It's not happening at all. And as much as I probably would play more Bayonetta, to go back and play Bayonetta 1 on the Wii U, I'm just like, but I've already done that. And I played Bayonetta 1... like, legit 15 times.
That's a lot of time.
Because I was trying to get all the alternate costumes and stuff.
I remember when you were on that grind.
And I could not get all of the frickin' portal timed things, and so I gave up on it. So, I think I may just hold off until The Order comes out. I am, like, aggressively watching the web for any tidbit now about Kingdom Hearts 3. Because Squeenix has been very, very quiet about it for quite
some time.
I hate
that they've been so quiet.
And now with Disney having the Star Wars brand underneath its belt, as well as Marvel.
Right.
You open up a whole lot of possibilities.
Could we possibly see...
The developers have already said that... something Star Wars and something Marvel appearing in the realm is not out of the realm of possibility, basically.
No, but my question is, because Kingdom Hearts is that blend between Disney and Square Enix stuff,
mm-hmm.
that I wonder if Disney Infinity would ever seek to reach out to Square and try to work out something where they'd make little... figurines of,
and
like
bring
Sora
some of the,
and
the
characters to Disney Infinity.
I think that it's not so much Square reaching out to Disney as much as Disney, when you're closer to the game coming out, probably wanting to have something in the toy box, at least, acknowledging Kingdom Hearts universe.
Because that would be really cool.
It would be amazing to have
That'd be
some
a good way
Kingdom
to get
Hearts Infinity figures. You know, I think that they've done a great job with the Marvel collection that they have.
How do you feel about the whole Amiibo figurines?
Amiibo?
Yeah, the Amiibos for the Brawls.
I think the Amiibos make a lot of sense. I think that as far as, like, collectors go, it's like a no-brainer. I think it's very weird that, like, already the collector piece of it has come out more so than the real...
Actually, I'm going, like, to take it out and actually use it.
Yeah, because there have been a couple of figures that were run with defects, and people have been selling them on things like eBay and stuff for thousands of dollars. Well, like, there was a defective Peach one, and I can't even remember what the print error was with her, but something was off with her, like, blatant on her figure. And it went for, like, $20,000.
What?
Because of the collectible
aspect
of it. You know, I mean, one of the reasons why I love Infinity, because I don't play it all the time, but what I love about it is the character figures, I keep them on display constantly. The quality is just so great, because for me, they're kind of, like, in that midpoint between being a perfect replica and being, like, chibi.
Right. Super deformed.
Yeah. Exactly.
I love that you have the Mickey, like, over all
of
them. Yeah, like,
Sorcerer Mickey sits on top of everybody, and I have a Stimpy figure on my mantle that's actually going to my office, so there will be nothing above Sorcerer Mickey when all is said and done. Because
he's casting Stimpy away.
Correct, because without Sorcerer Mickey, you know,
you don't have it, right.
He's in the position of power and always will be. But I think that, like, for me, it's not a draw, because I'm already into Infinity. If Brawl had come out with Amiibo figures before Disney Infinity existed, that entire level of my mantle would be Amiibos.
Would you have a Pikachu?
I would have a Pikachu, absolutely.
Okay.
I would absolutely have a Pikachu Amiibo. I think that it's a great mechanic for being able to introduce characters into the game, to have a figure that you swap in and out to do that.
Right.
Frankly, it just makes sense to me. But again, that's from after playing Infinity, where I'm like, yeah, I want to be this character now. It's a much more fun mechanic, and I feel a little bit more interactive with the game, going and getting power-up discs and play sets and things like that, and putting them onto a piece and then putting and swapping characters in and out, as opposed to just earning a background and saying I want to use it, or unlocking a character and then going to a menu and picking it. There's something that makes it feel more almost like a evolution of a board game.
Okay.
By doing those swap outs, right, that I enjoy. It makes it a little more tactile. And so I think for games like Brawl, it makes perfect sense, because, hey, I need to get this character now, and instead of having to play for 25 hours in order to reach some achievement to unlock them, I can actually go and get that figure, and now when I want to play with that character, I can put it on the board and I can play with it. You know, I like that mechanic. It makes complete sense to me. If I was going to pick up Brawl, you better believe that I would have a ton of Amiibos. But I'm not a big Brawl fan.
Right.
As I've mentioned before. And the Amiibos aren't a mover for me to be a Brawl fan. You know? There are a lot of characters that I
was never great at Brawl.
Like, in the Nintendo universe, I think that, you know, having characters like Falcon and Star Fox, as well as the Icebreakers characters, you know, some of the real kind of...
Can't let you brew that Starbucks.
But some of those really kind of... I don't want to say obscure, because in the Nintendo fandom, there's a niche that loves every game that ever happened.
See, now that you say that, I know I'm going to have to, in the show notes this week, put a video for the Honest Trailers guy, because he does one for Brawl. He's like... And I know he says something along the lines like, who knows who this character was? Congratulations, you're officially Japanese.
Like, exactly.
It's such, like, an obscure character that only anyone who's played anything outside of this region
would know. Right, you had to play something on the Famicom, you know. And you know, no disrespect to any of that, but it's just, it's not a mover for me, so.
It's not a mover and a shaker or a baker?
Yeah, I gotta, but, like, I see people post some of the characters, the amiibos, and I'm like, those are really great looking figures. Like, they did a really good job on the production value.
The Peach, like, the trim of her dress has it, because I looked at one when I was at a GameStop, and I'm just like, whoa, I'm like, I was not expecting that level of detail. Granted, I mean, even the figures for Disney Infinity all have a lot of detail to mm-hmm. them.
You know, like, I have a Vanellope von Schweetz character for Infinity, and they've got the candy that's in her hair absolutely perfect, you know, and I see, like, the little bit of Sarah Silverman, because, you know, sometimes when they do a character and a figure, they always lose something.
Yeah, usually.
You know, it's either they draw the character to be more ingenue-like, or they create
the figure. Oh, you mean like when they try to make Merida look better and thinner and sparklier?
Yes. Or, you know, for a male character, they try to make him look stronger, exactly, buffier. You know, or slender and cut to be more metrosexual than the character actually is. But what I like about the Amiibo figures, as well as the Infinity figures, is that they don't do that. You know, they have a little bit of playfulness for each of the characters, but the level of detail and respect for the character and what they're supposed to bring is in each and every figure. Like, I absolutely love my Jack Skellington figure. I feel like I have a Jack Skellington statue in my...
Yeah, it's actually really...
It's really phenomenally done, you know. So, it's my temporary fix while I try to save money to get a hot toy at some point in time, which I don't think will ever happen.
I don't even know what that is.
So hot toys are probably, I would say, the ultimate in character figures.
Okay.
Typically, your hot toys for characters start anywhere in the $300
and up. That is too rich. That is dark chocolate rich.
They are phenomenal if you're into those kinds of collectors. So when I do have my video game room, I would like to have some hot toys to reflect that. But for now, I'll just work on getting my Space Invader rug. It will be good.
Okay.
But what I'm talking about this week is like a Scotia video game surprise. It's Destiny. And
really?
Yeah, I got to talk about the expansion right. A little bit now that it's out. I warned you guys that this was going to happen.
Yep.
Okay.
You did.
So I want to talk a little bit about it now that I've been hands-on with it. But I'm primarily going to talk about an anime. So I'm going to jump in with the anime first.
Okay.
And then I'm going to do the Destiny thing on the back end. So that way, I get through the anime. If you're like, I don't want to hear any more Destiny, you can just turn the podcast off at that point.
But what about me?
You don't have anything else to talk about.
Yes, I do.
You do?
I do.
I thought you talked about your thing.
No, I haven't talked about my anime yet.
Oh, I thought you did. No. How did I miss that? Oh, we've been on this tangent this
whole
time.
Yeah, it's been a pretty long tangent.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, I'll talk about my anime real quick, and then you can talk about your anime quick, and then I'll end it with the Destiny update.
Okay.
How about that?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
That was a really long tangent.
It was a half a show tangent.
Whoops.
It happens. Especially
here. But it was a good one. It was a good one.
It was. Because, and it was still informative.
Yeah, and we haven't talked about Five Nights at Freddy's ever before.
No, because I only made it to night three.
Yeah, I'm not making it any night. So there you have it. So my anime, this is actually one that I've been watching on Hulu. Because it's not on Crunchyroll.
I wonder why.
It's a Funimation.
Okay, that's why.
So
is it on Funimation?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So if you have a Funimation account, you can watch it. If you have a Hulu Plus account and you don't have Funimation, you can watch it on Hulu Plus. So I discovered it actually as a recommendation from Hulu of, since you like this, you might want to check it out. And I'd never seen the title slide that was, because you know how Hulu Plus on Apple TV shows you like the channel art for the anime. It doesn't show you, like,
right, yes,
the individual thing. And I'd never seen that art before. Because I've looked at the anime section a lot at Hulu Plus, basically to figure out what the fuck Funimation is going to be releasing, because they never email me to let me know that new anime is up on the damn website.
I know, they don't do it to me either.
So I basically check Hulu Plus's anime section to see what new Funimation things are happening, because then I go over and see if they're streaming on Funimation so I can watch them without the commercials. Because I hate the commercials on Hulu Plus. So anyway, saw the title for an anime called Rage of the Bahamut Genesis. And it looked really actiony. It actually really reminded me a little bit of kind of the action style of Akame ga Kill.
Okay. Which I love the style of the show.
Yeah, so I thought, hey, let me take a look at this, because I think, you know, just visually off of this, it might be up my alley. And I have a policy that I usually will try an anime for at least 2 episodes before I'm like,
right,
pass.
I get 5. I'm very generous. I get 5.
I am not generous. If you can't get me in an hour, you're not going to get me.
True.
Because then that's too much work. So I bounced into this one, and I'm going to get my notes out because I just don't want to mess up character names. But basically, this anime is really interesting in that it's like a kind of like a pack that we've seen that blends a little bit of medieval times, but it's like future medieval.
Yeah, like they do the whole steampunk apocalypse. They always like to blend conflicting.
Well, because it's got that little bit of fantasy in it. So right. there are castles, there are mythical creatures, but there's also this crazy amount of technology to let you know that this is somehow futuristic.
Like Trigun did the whole apocalyptic, but also like high-tech, like sci-fi.
Exactly. So, and I find that Western-y. Typically as a story mechanic to be very good when it's applied correctly. In anime, and this is actually one that was out of Studio Genion.
Okay. Oh God.
Genion. Yeah. And so there's very rarely anything that comes out of Genion or Kadokawa that I don't enjoy. So I'm like, all right, I think I chose wisely. All right.
Right.
So we jump into it, and basically, the story takes place in this land that is a little bit fantasy, but also a little bit medieval.
Okay.
And so there's a war raging between heaven and hell.
Oh.
Blatantly heaven and hell.
AKA my pants.
Which doesn't happen in anime, but it's blatantly heaven and hell. Which I thought was the first thing, because they usually don't refer to hell.
No, they don't
refer to Satan or anything like that. Like, literally, the references are
got
made.
It. Yes.
Okay. And you start with what appears to be the typical lovable, joking thief running away from the diligent knight.
Okay.
So that thief is named Favaro, and the knight is named Kaiser, and the knight is chasing after Favaro, basically saying that he's going to kill him and fight him, and you don't know exactly why. Favreau's running from him, kind of giggling, laughing, but in a predicament where he's really trying to
figure his way out of the hitman.
So, kind of like a lot of Favreau's inner monologue reminds me kind of Lupin.
Okay.
The third.
Oh, Lupin.
In that, you know, I'm in a situation, I know I need to get out of the situation, damn it, I don't know how I keep getting in these situations, and I don't really want to be in them.
Right.
I want to try to be smooth and get out of it. So that's kind of Favreau's take, but as things go along, Favreau's able to make his escape from Kaiser, and Kaiser's all, damn it.
Oh, is it like Jean Valjean and Javert from Les Mis, but not as serious?
No, kind of, and it ends up being a little bit in that serious. So as you go through a couple more episodes, I'm going to go do my best to not give everything away. I haven't seen all the episodes, so I'm not going to spoil any endings for you, but I am going to tell you about the story.
Okay.
You learn as you get into a couple of episodes that Kaiser, his family, was a well-respected family of knights and nobility, and an accident happened where some treasure for the king was stolen underneath the watch of Kaiser's father, who is a knight of the king. And as such, their family was stripped of their honors, and his father was hung.
Oh, gee.
As you get deeper into some of the episodes, you find out that the main reason that Kaiser is after Favreau is because Favreau's father...
Does he want to restore, like, his family's, like, honor and stuff?
Yes, he does want to restore that honor, but Favreau's father was the king of thieves, and Favreau and Kaiser were friends growing up, and he believed that Favreau told his father about the shipment of this treasure, and it was his father's thieves that took it, and so he blames Favreau for his father's death and his family's dishonor.
I bet the weird twist is Favreau's not at all to blame, and they'll become best buddies in the end. Best friends!
So, you're right, Favreau was not to blame. You get that. You get that deeper, because it was a demon.
Okay.
Joan of Arc is in it. And basically, you have a Bahamut, because how can it be Rage of the Bahamut without a Bahamut?
Right, exactly.
There is a Bahamut that
has... Bahamut!
Yes, that has been stuck in slumber for thousands of years, we'll say. Hundreds of years, I guess.
I mean, when you have a goose down, you just don't want to get out from underneath that goose down.
He was sealed because he was destroying the entirety of... not only mankind, but also heaven and hell. The demons and angels were able to work together
to put him in that seal?
To put him to seal him in his slumber. And there is a seal and a key that when they come together will in
fact... The gatekeeper and the...
Keymaster, yes.
Yeah!
Will let Behemoth walk the planet again and destroy everything.
Oh, God.
There is, a break-in because the key is sealed.
Is it an actual key?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, kinda. It was a key. I'll get there.
Because I feel like it's a person in a person now. The entity of it is in a being.
It is. So there's a key that was guarded by heaven because heaven had the key, hell had the seal. The two sides can't actually walk into each other's realms, so that's how they determined everything would stay safe and Bahamut will never walk again. Well, loophole. And that loophole is Amara. And Amara is a very special girl. Because Amara is the spawn, we find out, of a demon and an angel. So Amara...
So she can walk across both sides. Both sides. Is she a thief?
She's not a thief. She's very immature. She's a little girl. And what we find out is that her growth was actually accelerated, and so she has and the mind of a child and acts very much like a 5-year-old because her body doesn't
her body's growing faster than her brain.
Yeah. And so she has been tricked, and you don't learn by who until well into the series, to go into heaven to get the key because she's told she needs the key to go to Niflheim in order to see her mother because she's never seen her mother.
Right.
As you go through the episodes, you learn that, her mother is an angel.
Okay, that
and,
makes sense.
The demons fear her because she had the ability to seal demons. So she was instrumental in stealing Bahamut.
Right.
Which is why her daughter is instrumental in freeing Bahamut.
Yes.
So there are various demons and entities, like, Azrael, and Beelzebub.
Of course.
Who are... trying to work behind the scenes to get Bahamut released. And Lucifer's just kind of chilling on his throne going, I know you're fucking me, but what do you think you're going to do, really?
Right.
And just chilling like, it's going to be fine. I ain't got shit to worry about.
If shit goes down, I can handle it.
But what's really phenomenal, and there's a bunch of other characters that are in it, Gabriel... who I swore the first time I saw that character that it was a girl. And the angels are so effeminate. It's very difficult to tell male angels from female angels. It's only...
The same thing happened in the realist one. Devil and Realist.
We watched. Yeah.
They did that too. Like, the demons and angels, they... Like, the ones that were closer to the diviner blood of fallen angels looked more effeminate than, like, the rougher ones.
Yeah. If it wasn't for the titties, I wouldn't be able to tell.
Oh, the titties? Apart.
Yeah, angels have... Some female angels have titties.
I thought in the original scripture, angels were stripped of those things that were tempting, like boobies and penises.
I don't know.
And vaginas.
I don't know, but boobies are very tempting. Anyway, what I love most is that the story is pretty interesting. It's paced very well, but... What really draws you to it is the visual. The animation style is really spectacular. I would probably put it on a Clover level.
Okay.
It's very intricate. Like, when Amara makes her transformation, where she is both demon and angel, her body is bathed in pure light and emanates out in different spaces glow, but then she has what appears to be, like, tribal-type tattoos down her body where the red through for the demon glows through, but her eyes are always piercing, and she has dark wings with red tips. It's very, very detailed. It moves very fast and fluid. And you know how sometimes when you watch anime series, you can tell where they did the cheap in-betweening?
Yeah.
And then the not, there's never a moment where you see cheap tweening.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that.
So it really is a just gorgeous looking series. So I highly recommend it for anybody that's looking for something new to watch. That has a lot of action. Again, because there's knights and sorcery and basically a big fucking dragon, because that's what the Bahamut is.
Big fucking dragon!
That will destroy everything. There's a lot of sword fight. There's some death. There are constant battles. Yeah. So there hasn't been, like, a lot of killing yet.
Okay.
But there has been some. So, like, there, as an example, there's a arc where, you find out how Joan of Arc ends up being killed. Basically, the king grows jealous that Gabriel the angel is constantly giving praise and giving aid to Joan, who is beloved by the people, when he's the king of the realm. He is then tricked by a demon using a poison mist into believing that Joan of Arc is trying to kill him.
Right.
So that she can take over the land. And so he convinces himself when one of his best knights, who happened to be Joan's third in command, ends up dead by decapitation at his door.
Ooh.
Yeah. He is convinced that Joan did it, and so he strips her of all of her accolades, has her beaten and thrown into a cell to be executed in front of the people, and the people are fucking revolting about it. There's one episode where Kaiser, who is a bounty hunter, like Favreau, because he's lost all of his honor, so you become a bounty hunter to hunt down mythical things for
money?
Bacchus, the god.
Oh, money, God!
Who is just constantly drunk off his ass with a talking Affleck duck, who wears a crown, whatever. So he's on this bounty and finds this sleepy town and is staying with this girl and is, like, eating this food and, like, gets sick and all this kind of stuff. But her parents are so welcoming of him coming to try and deal with, you know, all this stuff. Turns out that actually...
They're the ones involved?
No. Everyone in the town is actually a dead corpse that is being animated by the young girl because she's a necromancer. Because the
entire... Sounds like the first episode of Sundays Without God.
Because the entire town died, like, hundreds of years ago. And so Kaiser is saved by Favreau and Amara, who spray this stuff to figure it out. And the transition when the town goes from being what Kaiser thought it was to what it actually is. It's a little bit disturbing. But he goes through this whole thing, and the little girl is there, and she ends up getting bit by a zombie, so she's going to turn into one. And the only way to, you know, kill a zombie, as you know, is...
decapitation!
Yeah.
Burning.
But it turns out that that Kaiser doesn't have the heart to do it. You find out in the next episode that he didn't. But because she was a necromancer and got bit by a zombie, she becomes a walking zombie. And she doesn't decay. So she's able to use magic. She becomes part of the party. So they go along.
Oh, how convenient for them.
And so she's figuring things out in the castle and hopefully is going to right a bunch of wrongs. But again, it is a really, really fantastic looking series. So if you have a chance to watch it, it's definitely worth it. It's a good balance of action, story, and again, it's just visually very, very pleasing. So, Rage of the Bahamut, Genesis, definitely worth a check out.
Alright, so then on my side of the anime show...
Yeah, what you got on your anime show?
Well, for one, it was once again a series that you told me I should watch because it's right up my alley, and finally...
I was right? Again?
Again.
again with the right and my yes. might.
So I was down with the flu a lot of last week. So for the few days that I took off from work, I was like, I'm finally going to like marathon this and get my chops wet, essentially. Yeah. And the series is called Wolf Girl and Black Prince.
Yep.
And from the title alone, I was like, okay, you kind of got me. So the story takes place, obviously, in high school. Your main character, her name is Erica Shinohara, and she is going into her second year at this, no, first year at this school, with her best friend, who also got in the same school. And they're walking to school together, and Erica is plotting out how she's going to make friends, because they're not in the same class. Yep. They're in two different classes. And she's like, I have to make sure I'm versed on all the things that are, like, popular so that I can make friends because you're going to be in another class. And her friend, who's, I think she, her name's Sanda. Mm-hmm. She calls her San for short. And she's like, just be you. Like, don't plot anything. Don't build up this persona of who you'd like to be. Because you can't hold a lie forever. Like, you can't live a lie forever. And she's like, no one's going to know. I'm going to be the talk of the town. Blah, blah. And she's plotting to be deceitful. And when she gets to her class, because they're late, just barely on time, and they separate to their classes, when Erica gets to her class, all of the kids have already paired up and clicked up. And there's nobody else. So she's got to find one that she can kind of jump in and hopefully stick. And these other two girls come in a couple minutes after her, so she's like, oh, good, I'm not the only one who's late. Maybe I can just click in with them, and that'll be great. And they are, like, Harajuku girls, kind of. Like, they're
vapid.
Yeah. And a little, vapid, shallow, one-track mind kind of deal. And they're always talking about their boyfriends. Like, one of them has, like, a boyfriend who's older than her. I think he's, like, in college or, like, whatever. Yep. And one has a boyfriend who's closer to her age, and they seem more lovey-dovey and are just like, we're young and we're in love, yay! Like, that kind of dynamic. And Erica, you know, could hear that they're talking about boys and, like, what their plans are with their boyfriends. So she figures, oh, I can just talk about a boyfriend and all my exploits. Erica's never had a single encounter. So she's lying. And, like, and I think for the first few days, like, these other girls haven't caught on that she's being deceitful until eventually they realize a month later that they've never seen a photo. Every time they're like, oh, we should all go on double dates or triple dates. Erica's like, oh, she changes the subject. And, you know, and she has her friend Sanda every day call her. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, it's my boyfriend, I gotta go. And, like, and these girls are not, while they're vapid, are not dumb. So they realize that something is up. And, like, she can't hold the lie forever, which is what Sanda told Erica at the beginning. She's like, no, I'm just gonna go down to, like, Shibuya, and I'm gonna, like, take a picture of some hot guy, like, a candid, and be like, oh, that's my boyfriend. Which Erica then decides she's going to do. At least she's thorough. Like, she knows if she's going to do something, she's going to do it. And she goes to Shibuya or
Akihabara?
Yeah. And there are these hot guys. And, of course, she's, like, looking for the right one. And she has these girls talking, like, oh, wow, he's got to be, like, a model or something. And there's this hot guy across the street. Blonde hair, red eyes, kind, you know, svelte. Definitely, like, boy bandish material. Mm-hmm. And Erica gets kind of lost in the moment, and she's like, oh, I'll just take a picture of him. No one will ever know. And by the time she realizes she takes the picture, she's right up in the boy's face. So he has seen her take this picture, and it's a crime to take people's photos without their permission.
Yep.
Cosplay is not consent. And she poofs and runs away before he has any chance to even figure out who she is and whether or not she actually took the picture. So she manages to keep her lie up until eventually, after she's revealed the picture, that these two girls are like, I know who that is. Like, he goes here. And she was, like, freaking out because then, at that point, is when he happens to cross by.
Mm-hmm.
And she realizes that she has to let him in on the lie. Yep. In order to keep the lie alive.
And not get busted.
And this boy, who, his name is Koya Sata, I think. Mm-hmm. And he is, like, the prince of the school. Like, he's always got, like, the glowy, like, crystally things around it.
All the girls want to do
him. Like, he's always on an on state. Like, he always says the thing that he should say and not what he really wants to say. And she pulls him away, and he's like, it seems like you're in a, you know, you're having a problem. You can tell me, because he is pure and honest, and everybody just loves him. So she explains the lie. And it's like, I'm really sorry I dragged you into this, blah, 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 blah. You know, I just want to make friends. And he's like, I'll help you. And, you know, and she's all excited because she can continue this lie. He seems like he's just going to let her pretend that he's her boyfriend until she looks back up at him. And he's like, I'll help. But you have to turn around 3 times and bark like a dog. And, like, his whole demeanor at that point changes. His eyes get really dark and low, like the shadows come creeping in. And she realizes that Koya is, like, sadistic.
Yep.
Like,
a lot.
He's got a sadistic streak. So she's like, you want me to what? He's like, yeah. He's like, I'm not going to do it for free. So, of course, she's, like, trying to decide whether or not she's going to. And he's like, or I could just out you right now, and then you can lose the friends that you have, and then you'll be an outcast, and everybody will hate you because you're a wolf girl and you lie. And that's when I realized, because at first I didn't realize what the wolf girl meant, but he's making a reference to Peter and the Wolf and the Boy Who Cried Wolf, which was a story about lying, about danger, and then end up having danger and not having anyone come to your rescue. So I was like, oh, it's genius. But anyway, so she agrees to be his slave, or in his own words, his dog.
Yep.
Which is kind of weird when you hear about it. I mean, not in my line of life, but in most people's lives, that's kind of a weird statement to hear. And she's like, what? I'm your dog? He goes, yep. He's like, I love dogs, you know. And then all of a sudden he gets kind of sweet. He's like, they're just so cute and they're so loving and they're always so loyal to their master. They could just sit there for hours and not eat if it would appease their master. And like, it gets darker and darker. The intent is darker and darker every time he talks about it, you know. And you're meant to get creeped out by it, and it certainly does work and it's effective. So she holds on to this lie, and now, as far as the school is concerned, these two are dating. And, like, on the outside, they look like a perfect couple. They walk to and from school. They have lunch together. But the minute they're off school grounds, he is the sadistic, mean guy who does very horrible things to her. Like, things that you wouldn't even do to your dog, especially if you love your dog. Which plays up... there's a weird dynamic with that, too. Because, as cruel as he treats her, woven in between all that harshness, there is some genuine like and genuine affection, mm-hmm. that he's not willing to give it up, because he realizes that once he does, he loses all of his power. And I understand that from a place in real life. But so it's really interesting to see this whole thing play out. And his character is very Sundre, yes. I think it's called. So like, so it's like, oh, very loving, and then really harsh and mean, and then, it's very bipolar.
Yep.
Is what I see it as. And he's got a bunch of friends that he kind of pushes away, but they're all like, he's really cool, and when you get to know him, he's awesome, and he's kind of a dick generally anyway, and he's a dick to everybody, so it's not just you. And they're trying to convince him to stop being such a dick to Erica, because Erica genuinely, after dealing with the lie for so long, has developed actual feelings for him. And this is her first real encounter with love. And he's very abrasive about it because he has a tragic backstory, which at this point we're getting hints to, but have not fully seen it to know exactly what it is. I'm not fully done with the series yet, and it's simulcasting on Crunchyroll right now.
Yep.
The manga of it, which this is based on, first came out in 2011 and is still running now. So it's a long-running series. Like, they've obviously done enough to keep it going. If you are a fan of stuff like Close to Me, Say I Love You, Wallflower, and I'm trying to think of any other ones that also have this, His and Her Circumstances,
yeah,
or Switch Girl, or even Skip Beat, you will really appreciate what this series is doing. Animation is clean, light enough, but obviously they're paying attention to a lot of different details that I've never seen. Like, they're doing this thing with eyes now where instead of having the light reflect in one big dot and then a smaller one, they're doing, like, smaller dots now to make the eyes look much more expressive, which is a really interesting thing that they're doing, I think, this season, mm-hmm. in some stuff. Singling out certain hairs for, like, a highlight, so it's not, like, a strong patch of different hair. Like, they're really playing with texture this year, I've also noticed. The opening song is amazingly catchy, which, as you know, music openings are a way to really get me. If you can't catch me in that first 3-minute snippet, you might have a hard time catching me in your episode. But like I said, it's on Crunchyroll. I'm sure you can find it anywhere else too, but that's where I'm watching it. And if that's what you're in for, if that's what you're into, and you want to treat people like dogs, well, you could take a page out of this man's book, because he does it pretty well.
I told you it was right up your
alley. It's so up my alley!
Alright, so as promised, we will now end the episode on Destiny.
So if you don't want to hear about it, you can shut it off right now.
And thanks for listening! Alright, so for the cool people that have hung around...
Well, the people Destiny. Who are just as addicted as she is.
Yes. Because it's not a habit. It's cool. I feel that...
Destiny is habit-forming.
It is habit-forming. But in a good way. So, the Dark Below expansion is now out and live.
And it took me like 45 minutes to realize I actually had it.
Let's not talk about that.
It was a fun experience.
You were so adamant that you did not buy it.
I was like, I don't have it, and I have to go and buy it, and it won't let me buy it. Why won't it take my money? Damn it. Why?
And I'm like, because it already took your money. I'm looking at your purchase history. You purchased the same version I have. Same one. Same thing. You already have it. Anyway, we got through it. You're all set.
I'm good.
DLC. Right?
Yay!
So, for those of you who are not familiar with Destiny or with the expansion pack, it is a massive multiplayer online shooter RPG.
Yeah, that's as close to an thing
so
as you can get.
So it's an FPS RPG, FPS MMORPG.
Okay.
Now, The Dark Below is the first expansion.
Which I think should be the undercover album for Outkast.
Of
The Dark Below!
Of two planned expansion passes of the game. It opens up a new...
strike.
A new strike.
Yep.
It opens up a...
New quest line.
And it opens up a new raid.
Yep.
For the game. The raid also raises the level cap for players.
From 30 to 32!
Yes, and it does make a big difference because in that raise of the level cap, they've also released a whole slew of weapons. All existing gear has actually been leveled for buff. So all existing legendary and exotic weapons, as well as armor, have all been respec'd and buffed higher to allow your character to get to 32. So it's not just being stuck on raid gear. Gear that you can get from any faction provider. So the gear that you could get from the Crucible Master has been rebuffed. The gear that you can get from the various factions has been rebuffed. And then all of the exotics that you can earn or that you can buy have also been spec'd higher. One thing that is both, I think, interesting and extremely frustrating, I made a little bit of mention to it, but now seeing it in practice, I'm even more frustrated about it, is the treatment of weapons that you already have, being able to upgrade them to the
new spec. Let me upgrade you.
The way that it works is if you have a exotic weapon... You can, if Xur, the Agent of Nine that comes on Friday mornings and leaves very, very early Sunday morning.
I know.
If Xur is carrying that weapon in the new buffed form, if you purchase from him an Ascendant Shard for that shard and 7,000 Glimmer, you can swap your version of that weapon
for the beefed up one.
For the newly spec'd one. However, upgrades that you've done at that point to the one you're trading in are not swapped. You
so
start
you have
from
to,
scratch.
Oh, woof.
Okay. In some cases, for me, this has left me swapping an exotic for a light kind that actually specs higher in damage than currently what I have mine specced at, so it works out okay. But there are quite a lot of people that I know that that's not the case. And this goes the same for gear.
Oh.
So if you have an exotic chest that you've maxed
eye
out,
roll,
and you want to now get the one that will let you hopefully get close to 32, You gotta sell it and respec it. So all those Ascendant shards.
Nope. I am so mad at that.
All that helium, all that relic iron, all that spirit bloom. It's all for naught.
No!
And you gotta do it again.
No!
Yes, you do.
And people are doing it.
Some anyway. People are, but they're pissed about it. I'm not pissed. It's frustrating. I wish that, like, if you're trading an exotic that was fully leveled, that you would at least be able to trade it, since you are having to buy the weapon. It's not like you just give the shard and the weapon and he just hands you the same, like, one. You do have to spec and spend money as right. well. So I really feel like if I have leveled it 100% to full damage,
I would not want to trade it in. Level it back.
It depends on, you know, if the new damage that it does is high enough, you might want to. So as an example, I did it with my last word.
Oh, did he have it?
Yeah.
Damn it! I have that!
So I did it with my last word, and it was spec'd higher for the trade-in one than the version that I currently had that I had spec'd twice.
Okay.
In buffing it. So it started at a level higher than what I already had buffed, so I didn't feel like I was wasting anything. I hadn't put too many Ascendant shards into it, so...
Okay.
But for people who have, like, full-on gear that's fully spec'd, you know, arms and legs
right,
and
yeah.
things like that, ooh. To start those over from scratch just on the
quest. Well, I mean, I have an exotic helmet that I bought from Zurin, if that he ever has that one. Like, I've only got one more thing to fill up, and the only reason why I have it is because I don't have enough Ascendant shards for it.
Yep, so now comes a point where you now have to balance and go, okay, do I want to hold out hope for this guy carrying a like-minded one of these things in the future so that I don't
have to do that
upgrade
thing?
It at all and stay at the level that I'm at for a while? Or do I upgrade it and just eat the fact that when he does carry it at some point in time...
That he's also going to bring me some humble pie that
I might... have to eat the humble pie and get it. So I think that it was a misstep to be like, you know, if you've maxed the thing out, if you swap it for cash and the shard, which you do have to buy the shards, so they do cost strange coins. I just feel like if you had one that was fully upgraded, you should be able to change it out for one that's left at the halfway point.
Yeah, that makes so more that, sense.
You know, and only for fully upgraded, not for one that's just partially upgraded. And I just think that that was a missed opportunity. I think that that probably would have killed, like, a big chunk of the frustration that some people are feeling. That, you know, I spent all those shards. Because when you think about it, for, like, a chest, you're talking there's at least 5 points where you have to upgrade for shards. And most of those are a 6-shard upgrade. So you're talking 30 Ascendant shards that you just blew.
Woo! That would make
and you gotta do it again.
Oh, no.
You know, so I think that it was a missed opportunity to, again, not for like ones that were partially spec'd. I think if you're partially spec'd and you decide to start over, it's on you.
Really, yeah.
But for those ones where you were fully done, I think that it should have started when you did the swap automatically at the 50%. So there's that's going on. As far as the content itself, I think that the Eris storyline is actually really good. I've been through, like, 4 of the quests now on one of my characters and 3 on another. Frankly, if they had this line as the lead-in to the initial release of the first raid, and then just added the raid on that comes in this one at the later date...
I feel like, with what you're doing in the downloadable content, the minute that you do the quest that puts you for the Sword of Crota, that would have been the best time for her to show up. And that would have been a great juicy side tangent quest thing that would have
exactly that like you couldn't get into until you were a certain level, so it would just sit there and mock you the entire time,
which is like what the rest of the game does.
But I do think that would have been great to have, you know, at launch. I do think that the boosts for all the weapons are really fantastic. If you run over to the Vanguard Armory and look at, you know, the damage that some of those things do now, I think that for anybody picking up the game this holiday season, they're going to be treated to an experience that I think we probably all really wish that we had.
We were hoping when it initially came out.
Because
agree.
I think that it's really balanced now. You know, I don't get kicked to orbit.
And now that we figured out my problem, neither do I.
You know, I don't get kicked to orbit, even on the weekends with heavy play. The raids run really well. They now have the team chat for when you're playing with fire teams that aren't just made up of your friends, which when you're doing strikes where you're paired with random people through matchmaking, having the option, not being forced into chat with them, I think is phenomenal.
I agree.
And it just works, and it's easy to toggle on and off, and it doesn't really take away from your focus on gameplay, the rebuffs of all the weapons. It just feels like a much more balanced Destiny right now. So I think that anybody that's like getting these for Christmas is really walking into a fantastic Destiny experience. And then on the heels of that will be another expansion pack. So what I think is really interesting is that like the Activision team and the Bungie team have been talking about the next Destiny a little bit already, in that they've said that, you know, their plan for this thing the entire time was not for this to be just a one and done. They are building a franchise. But the biggest thing that they said, and I think that it's super important, and the reason why I'm probably never going to stop playing this game,
probably,
is that just like in Mass Effect, your Destiny character and all your gear, your shit from your vault and everything, will carry over into the next Destiny game.
Oh, nice. Nice.
And so they're like, our big thing is we want people to build relationships, to take pride in the characters that they've created, and really feel a kinship with them and the weapons that they've built up
they've
for them.
Slaved over that kind creating. Of thing.
And so it's not going to end with this Destiny. When we have the next, you know, game, you will be able to bring that with you. And so your character is then yours.
Right.
Or in these cases, your characters. So I continue to have a ball with it. It runs phenomenally for me, especially now that I don't get kicked to orbit every couple of days. So I'm looking forward to running the new raid and kicking Crota's ass.
Kick his ass!
So keep it coming, Bungie, because I'll keep playing it.
She'll keep giving you her money.
Yep. You can take my money. You can take my money. So there it is. There's the anime. There's the end of the Destiny. So with that, I gotta let you guys know that if you wanna keep up with all the stuff that we're doing, then first and foremost, you wanna hit up our website, www.egmnow.com/electricsisterhood, to peep all the stuff that we're writing about. Previews, reviews, opinion pieces, just some blurbs and things that are sticking in our brains. You'll find it there. As always, subscribe, and that'll make sure that the moment we put out a new article that you'll be able to know that it's available for your peepers to get upon, which is important, because reading is fundamental.
I see what you did there.
As far as this podcast goes, if you like what you heard, and you know you do, then you want to make sure that you visit our website, www.electricsisterhood.com, and subscribe to our podcast. We put out brand new podcasts every week, and you can get them on our website. You can get them in iTunes, either on your desktop through the iTunes application, or on your mobile device. Your iOS app would be the podcast app that you can subscribe to the Eshcast. But guess what? We're in a bunch of other places, too.
Yeah.
You can get us on Stitcher Radio. You can find our show over at the VOG Network.
On Tuesdays.
You can find us on pretty much any podcast search engine.
Look under your
planet.
Look under your tables.
The podcast could have been there.
But it wasn't there.
If that's where they put their...
Open your favorite book. Oh, look, there we are.
Aww.
Told you.
Because reading is fundamental.
See how... Yeah. Because I totally did that on purpose.
Call back. All right. So... all kinds of places that you can find our podcast. If you're listening to our show on any of those things and you like it, please make sure that you support some of the other great shows that are part of the Land of Esh, like No Borders, No Race, brand new episodes on Tuesday, hosted by our homeboy KBD. If you're into indie, whether it's music, movies, TV, entertainment of all kinds, trust us, KBD is talking about it, so you definitely want to check it out and vibe there. If you need beats for your feet, something to wiggle you through hump day, then make sure that you hit up geekagro.com and subscribe to the Geek Agro Podcast.
Right.
Hosted by our homie, Deuces Wild. If it's trap, if it's EDM, if it's got some serious 808 going on, then you're going to hear it at Geek Agro. And on Thursdays, if you've got issues...
He's got issues.
Y'all can have issues together. The Issues Guy Issues Program. Call in live. Be part of the YouTube stream. Share your issues. Chitty chat. It's not a big whoop, but it is a shit ton of fun.
And it's cheaper than actual therapy.
It definitely is. So make sure that you check that out. And for the rest of the week, keeping your nerd needs satiated, we are all upon the interwebs. Whether it's social, on Facebook at facebook.com/landofesh, or on Twitter, twitter.com/ESHnews. You can interact with us, ask us questions, share stuff, favorite our things. We like it.
We like it.
We like being your favorite things.
I want to be your favorite thing.
So, you know, do that. Follow us. Fan us. Interact with us. If there's something you'd like to hear us talk about on the show, hit us up on the socials. Let us know. Guess what? We kind of sort of take requests. If you got something interesting, we'll check it out.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll share our opinion. So with that, I turn to my sister and I say, hey, yo, sis.
Hey.
What should you dig in this week?
Smiles.
Aww.
And pink fluffy unicorns dancing on rainbows.
Dang it. Yeah, dang it.
I actually learned it on my U-Bass.
Oh, no.
Don't. Yeah.
Oh.
Yay! No. What shit are you digging this week?
Pink
fluffy unicorns dancing on rainbows?
No, I'm not digging that at all, and I never will. I am digging on... I am digging...
You're dipping low.
I'm digging on epic rap battles in history.
Oh, they're so... Have you seen their Oprah versus Ellen DeGeneres?
Yes, and so I am digging real, real hard on ERB. That's my crush this week.
Okay.
So with that, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And until next time,
keep it classy.